All right, what's up, folks?
We're back.
Took us a minute, but we made it.
We survived the holidays. Hope you guys had a good one as well.
Yeah, so we just got done recording an episode with our good friend Sheldon Howe.
He's an avid outdoorsman, hunter, fisherman, shed hunter, and everything in between.
That's right. He's a great guy. I mean, he really is. This conversation was a blast. I'm glad we got to do it.
Yeah, it was like, I could have talked with him 3 more hours. So we'll have to have him on again for sure.
But yeah, it's good. And we thank you guys for listening in, following the story with us. I know we're kind of slow, but we're getting there.
We're picking it up. See ya. This will be a good one for you folks. So,
all right. Enjoy. Thank you.
Yeah. Deuces.
All right. What's going on, Sheldon?
Not a whole lot. I'm excited to be here.
Good. We're excited to have you on.
Yeah, I actually ran into Sheldon at the gym earlier. Was it this week?
Yeah,
it was Sunday.
It was Sunday, I believe.
And me and Sheldon have been buddies since elementary school, bro. Like first grade. I'm not even kidding. Like we were like OG homies. So
this is from the beginning.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Yeah.
Where'd you go again?
Fielding. Yeah, they tore down our school and put a new one up.
Yeah, bro. I still drive it by. I'm like, you know, the old memories. Bro, do you remember? So we were like, on the big snow days, when we were like, the blizzard would come. We would bring our big coats and we would just walk to the corner of the grass and see if you could make it out there in the snow, bro. I remember that.
I don't know if I remember that.
Yeah,
that
like it was the weirdest thing. We're like, let's hike out there. Like, we don't know why. And it would be like, we'd have to sneak out because there would be like, it'd be snowing so bad. They're like, inside day. We're like, no, dude, we're sneaking
out. Let's go out there. There's no inside days.
That's a weird thing I remembered, but yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, bro.
There's a lot of like memories that just kind of come back from elementary school days.
Yeah, just the strangest things.
Like I remember, I had one the other day. So I think it was like fourth grade. You know, you kind of already got your friends kind of set up.
Yeah.
Well, there's this new kid that moved in, and no one really knew what he was up to. You know, didn't really like him just because he was new. Mm-hmm. And he decided he wanted to come play football with us at break. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. Kind of pissed off about it. And anyway. He was playing receiver, and I remember they threw the ball to him, and it was kind of high, so he kind of had to jump for it. I remember in my mind thinking, like, there's no way he's catching this. And so he was up in the air. I just gave him a good old shove, you know. Mm-hmm. Lost his feet, landed on his back.
Oh.
And I turned around kind of laughing about it, and I looked down. He caught the ball, and he got up and said, nice hit. And I'm like,
whoa.
All right.
He's accepted.
We're going to be friends now.
He's one of those.
Yeah, and he was my friend for 2 more years before we moved again.
Well,
best friend.
That's funny, bro. That's good. So, Sheldon, so you're like outdoorsman, hunting, all these things.
That's me.
Yeah. What got you into all that? So start back to the beginning.
So the beginning, when I was younger, it started with my dad. He kind of got me into the small game of things. He was never into big game. Mm-hmm. It was always kind of doves and then ducks and just anything bird related.
Okay.
That's where I started. At first, I actually hated it. I was a wuss. I was scared of the gun, period. Like, that was it. And I just wasn't into it.
Really?
My dad thought, like, man, this kid's not going to do it.
He's not liking this.
Yeah, like, he's a wuss. He ain't going to do it. So that's how it was for probably the first year and a half. And then I just kind of, like, broke the ice.
Uh-huh.
It just became an addiction for birds mainly. You know, that's how it was for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got old enough to where I started hunting deer a little bit.
Okay.
First few years I hunted deer just with a rifle. It was more just like, just shoot one, get it done over with. Doesn't matter the size, just shoot one.
Meat buck.
Bring it home, meat it, you know, eat it, meat buck, and then go back to hunting birds. Like, that's how it was.
Okay.
So for probably a few years it was like that until my uncle gave me a bow. It's just an old bow. I got that in my hand and it just like sparked a little bit of interest there.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really have any mentors at that time, so I just kind of like learned everything on my own, read a lot of stuff. My first year was rough bow hunting.
Yeah.
I shot a deer.
Burning so difficult.
I shot a ton of deer. Didn't know what the heck I was doing. Had a sight on my bow. I'm flinging arrows left and right, like all day. Like, just, oh, he's, you know, 120 yards. All right, you know, I'm flinging arrows. Like,
oh, no.
A lot of the time, I wasn't even ranging the dang things, you know. It's just like, just
hold high.
You know, it's like full run. I'm just like shooting. So my first year was real rough, but it was a total learning experience.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
I learned a ton. So that's how that was for a little while. I had a couple buddies come with me, Chase Bingham, you guys know Chase.
Oh, yeah.
He came with me one time. We snuck right up on a couple bucks. I had them like 20 yards and ended up missing them too. I had no idea what I was doing. So didn't kill a deer. Like, long story short, didn't kill with my bow that year.
Uh-huh.
Gone with my rifle. And I learned a lot throughout that year, just kind of like, the basics on what to do and learned a lot. And so that next year I kind of got the bow in my hand again, got a different one, a newer bow.
Uh-huh.
And I'd learned a lot, and it's still, even that year, it was still tough. But mm-hmm. I was able to kill my first deer. And
well, how old were you when you very first started bowing?
Oh, fetch. It was, had to have been like, I was probably 14.
Yeah, so, I mean, at 14 at that time, you weren't even on YouTube consistently, like, learning how to bow hunt either, yeah, right?
YouTube,
yeah.
It was wasn't that before, big. Probably there.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, once Eric Chesser and those guys kind of came into the industry, like, eventually, uh-huh. Because Eric was kind of an idol there for a little while, mm-hmm. and now we're buddies, but
uh-huh.
he was for a little while, and just the whole hush environment and that positivity yeah. just kind of brought me into it a little bit, and so...
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So that... They brought you into just hunting, period. No, yeah. I thought you'd have been
into like the whole bow hunting thing. Yeah, because okay. I was into the hunting and stuff like that, and big games, like something mm-hmm. just sparked there. And then okay. once I started seeing a few of those guys, and they became my mentors, that's what really just like, man, I want to be like these guys, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of what started it, and just you know, year after year, I've just ever since then, it's just been mm-hmm. that's just what I do.
Yeah,
those Hushing guys really have something special going on there.
They really pretty do. Unique. Good group of guys.
Yeah.
So, and I'm on a pretty good friend basis with Eric now, so,
cool.
which is crazy, you know, I have a mentor like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's probably the him. Best you can as far as the hunting industry goes. It doesn't get a whole lot better than
yeah.
that.
So yeah, I mean, that killed my first deer that year. It's kind of crazy. He ended up dying in actually a reservoir, so I had to go swim for him.
No kidding.
Gosh, yeah, had some geez. Boaters come by, and they picked me up on the boat and dragged me across with my dead deer. Like, his leg. Yeah, and they're like, what the hell is that guy doing over there waving on this side of the bank? And I'm like, hey, I got a deer. You want to help me?
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of crazy. That was my first animal with a bow.
Huh?
And then I've also, like, I lost one that year, too. So I'd, mm-hmm. I'd hit one and lost it. Didn't make a great shot, and it ran down through town. So I have no idea where it ended up. It probably died in somebody's backyard, yeah, for all I know, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up getting that deer probably about a week or two later uh-huh. after that. And then,
oh, fiasco.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of how the bow hunting kind of came into play. And then big okay. game after that has just been something that I've mm-hmm. cared a lot more about rather than the small game. So mm-hmm. I kind of, like, left away from that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of sure. what happened there.
I'm kind of similar as you. Well, I grew up big game hunting, kind of always had that, but it was me and my dad like hunted pheasants and ducks a lot too, mm-hmm. but kind of the same thing. My love for like the passion for hunting elk and deer kind of outweighed the pheasants
right.
and the ducks as much. But yeah, I still really enjoy it. It's yeah. a lot of fun.
And it's just, I feel like it's just because I never really like got that side from my dad.
Yeah.
And then once I experienced that for myself, it's like, wow, this is awesome. This is totally different.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I just like learning everything on your own and doing it yourself. It just means that much more mm-hmm. to you.
It's funny. Like we're all hunters as whole, obviously, but there's, it's pretty segregated.
Yeah, I feel it really
like,
is.
You know,
really
waterfowlers, you're like, you're, even your bow hunters and rifle hunters.
Yeah,
you know, is are
different. Oh, it's big time. Big time is different.
What do you? So your passion lies more in bow hunting.
I would. Correct? Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, I love getting a rifle in my hand. My confidence level goes way up because it's like,
yeah, oh yeah, it's like the game has changed now.
It's like here we go. You know, something's going to
yeah,
die,
yeah. bro.
But with seriously. A bow, the challenge of it is just like, it's unreal, like getting that close to an animal,
mm-hmm.
especially elk during the rut. That's ooh. By far my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's nothing better than letting out a bugle and having one scream at you mm-hmm. and come right in. So
yeah, send the hair on the back of your neck,
oh,
up
yeah,
for
that's,
sure.
So,
that's fun.
So elk hunting is probably my favorite, at least in September when they're rutting.
Yeah.
If they're not rutting, I'm all about mule deer. So uh-huh. that's just what I love to hunt.
Yeah.
So
super cool, man.
That's fascinating you say that about the rifle thing, because I felt that this year, too. Because, like, you hunt all season, all summer long with your bow, and then, you know, I don't, the only rifle hunting I do is, you know, depredation tags, like
right.
kill some doe.
Yeah.
But I get out there, grab the rifle, I'm like, all right. I just, like, pick one, like, something's going to die.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
We don't even worry
like
about it.
3% chance of, like 3% success rate on, like, yeah. the general Utah deer hunt.
Yeah.
It's archery. Insane. It's hard. But I'm the same way, like, I had the dedicated hunter this year tag, and I probably spent total probably 15 days in archery, like
yeah.
between me and my dad. And as soon as like the rifle came around, I was like, the game has changed.
really
like,
does.
All the deer that you've seen, you know, like 300 yards with the bow hunt, it's like, it's way different. Like,
yeah.
That's a deal. But with the rifle, you're like, oh, man.
yeah,
he's
exactly.
dead.
It's a done deal.
Yeah.
So,
but I want to get into. So, how am I going to say this? So you've wounded a few animals, right?
Yes.
Nick, yep. What, as a hunter, And we take a lot of ridicule for that. Like, why don't we go get your meat from like the grocery store or something like that? You know, I feel like there's a lot of uneducated people out there.
There really is when it comes to that kind of the subject. And yeah. And the thing about that too is that side of things, it's really touchy with those kind of people because a lot of them just don't understand.
They're ignorant to it. It's frustrating.
I feel like that's all it is they're ignorant when it comes to trying to understand the whole process of it rather than just, you know,
trying to learn and be willing to be open-minded.
Yeah, I feel like if they were willing to be open-minded and learn about it a little bit, they'd be a lot better off. Because a lot of them just say, like, hey, you don't got to go kill something, whatever. Like, you know, just all that kind of stuff. They don't understand where their actual meat and stuff's coming from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I take a lot of pride in, like, going out there and spending, you know, 20, 30 plus days to kill an animal, spending countless amounts of money and time and effort to bring home, you know, a little bit of meat, so.
It's more than that, you know, it's just the meat or even, like, a trophy under the antlers or whatever. For me, it's the experience as a whole.
The whole process of the hunt.
Exactly. And it's some people, even in the hunting world, would look at me like I'm crazy, and I've heard this from a lot of people. It's once the animal's laying there dead, it's like, there's a lot of sadness involved with that because, like, it's over.
And people, you know, don't understand that either. That's something that just comes from hunters that have been through all that, the whole process, the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, so
everything leading up to it. My favorite thing, like, I like hunting, not killing.
Right.
You know, so I like the scouting, I like running camera, like packing saw, all those things that come along with it.
Right.
That's what I enjoy.
Well, and if it was all about killing too, like, I'd be a horrible killer.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very good at that.
The actual execution part is hard.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Very difficult.
So what drives you to keep pursuing it? What are your goals, you know, with it? What's your drive?
You know, I mean, everybody looks at the antlers and stuff like that when it comes down to it. That's obviously something everybody looks at.
Yeah, you're lying like you're not.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to say, like, I'm just out there to kill whatever, you know. I definitely want to harvest a mature animal.
Yes.
A lot of the time, sometimes you don't. Like, you get towards the end of the season, sometimes you don't. But that's, like, the main goal. And I don't know, just I feel like the whole process is up. You have to love the process.
Oh,
if you 100%. Don't love the process of the hunt and everything that comes along with it, the hardships and everything like that, then you're never going to enjoy it.
Yes.
And I feel like that's probably what drives me more than anything. You know, failing sucks, but at the same time, it just makes you want more. Like, it's almost like a drug, you know. You might fail a few times, but, like, when you actually have that success, it's like, man, like, it's just
so,
like,
worth it.
Exactly. So I feel like that's probably what drives me more than anything.
It's kind of similar, like you're saying. I enjoy, like, the harder the hike, the colder the temperature, like, the more extreme or difficult it is, the more I seem to enjoy it.
Right.
Maybe not in the moment of
it. Yeah, at the moment it sucks. Like, you're like, man, I just want to leave.
This heavy pack, it's so steep, this is terrible. We get the chocolate. Or even a day later, like, man, could I have gone harder? Like, did I quit early? Like, you know, like you're saying.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
So, you had a unique story last year. You drew a limited entry elk tag, and you had a wild story with that, man. I remember kind of following up with it.
That was a crazy hunt.
You drew the same year as my dad did, so we were kind of, I was interested in what you had going on. So, go into that. You know, that's a pretty inspirational story for me.
So,
for
sure. Like, that kind of hunt, what kind of happened with that is, in our state, in Utah, we have a limited entry system when it comes to drawing, like, a premier tag, or, like, a better tag, so you have better opportunities for elk or deer, whatever you want to hunt in our state.
Yep.
And so, I decided to put in for this unit in the state, knowing that I would draw, because low success, mainly all private land, and I knew I'd draw with 0 points, and so I put in. I knew I was going to draw, so I drew archery tag. A lot of people told me that I should have just turned my tag back in.
On top of that's a drought year.
It is on top of a drought year. And so I was just like, I didn't want to hunt a general unit because general tags, they're obviously you can buy them over the counter.
Yep.
But the areas you hunt, there's not very many elk. There's a lot of people and it's tough.
Yep.
And so that's why I put it for this hunt. I was like, well, it might give me a little more opportunity. And it said that it was composed mostly of private, which it was, but a lot of the unit did have a lot of public as well. A lot of the public had no elk on it. I scouted a lot in the summertime, and I didn't see one elk on the actual unit until that week that I hunted.
Really?
So, not even a cow.
Wow.
So, I set up a few cameras, and there's a unit that borders that unit, South Cache. And so, what I would do is I'd just stay on the boundary line when I actually hunted it, because I was hunting mule deer probably the first 3 weeks of the hunt.
Okay.
I just waited till, like, the last week to hunt, the prime of the rut, you know. It ends, like, the second week in September.
Yep.
And so, I figured I'd go in there that week. I went in there and started throwing a few bugles, and I had bulls responding immediately.
Really?
I was like, sweet. And they were just lower from where I had seen them in the summertime, and so I knew I could get them to come across and look for cows.
Yep.
And so that's what I started doing, I mean, the first few days, and I missed bulls every single day.
Yeah.
It was tough. Like, back to the basics of archery hunting again.
It's going along with that, like, it's tied so much in with your confidence, you know. Yeah. You practice all summer or whatever.
Exactly.
and you have that, and you miss a couple shots. Like everything you thought you knew is just out the window.
Exactly.
That point,
yeah. You can practice as much as you want and be as confident as you want, but when it actually comes out in that moment, you forget a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. Like almost all the bulls that I missed, I didn't range a single one of them.
Really?
I just didn't range them because I had never hunted elk before this. So this is my first time hunting elk.
Uh-huh.
And so I learned how to call a little bit, but I didn't know like the elk language, the talk. And mm-hmm. so I didn't know what they were saying when I was saying something to them.
Oh.
And so I would call for them. And it was like, anytime they got within 100 yards, they were dead silent. I'd mm-hmm. come around a tree and they were right there.
Yep.
And I'm like, shiz, now what do I do? You know, so I just yeah. draw back and, oh, he's probably 40 and fling an arrow, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
You know? And so that's what happened with the first few, actually all mm-hmm. of them basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up that whole week, I was getting less motivated every day because it's like
the pressure of it, you know, your days are getting dwindled down, you know,
right. The end of the hunt was like that Friday.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, fetch, like I've got this week to do it. So I stayed up there and camped in my truck. I'd roll my windows down at night and I could hear the bulls bugling all night. And I'm like, okay, they're all over up there. It's only a matter of time.
Yep.
Went and checked a couple of my trail cameras, had bulls on my cameras. I thought about sitting next to my cameras, but
uh-huh.
decided not to, just decided to be a little aggressive and just go.
With the running gun.
Yeah, because it was uh-huh. still kind of like pre-rut, and so a lot of the bulls didn't mm-hmm. have cows yet.
Okay.
They were still kind of like getting grouped up and then fighting and whatever, yep. establishing dominance there.
And they're still running. At that point, they're coming out of country.
Right. Okay. Right. So it was probably the first fetch. I was there for, I think, 6 days, and the first 4 days... I missed bulls every day. Wow. I think I missed like 6 bulls within wow. 4 days. And these were all like nice bulls.
Really?
I didn't see a single raghorn the whole hunt.
Really?
They were all nice 6 points.
And you didn't range any of them?
No.
Sheldon.
I know. That was bad on my part, but like I said, it's a learning experience.
In that moment, you know, especially, you know, it's easier said than done. You're hunting solo. Nobody's yeah. there to remind you of anything.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, it's just like a super intimate moment. It's intense.
Right. Yeah. So I had a lot of arrows that I had to pull out of trees and the dirt and whatever else. You know, I'd shoot and I knew, like, my arrow, I'd see it pegging the tree. And I'm like, fetch, not again. Like, it's like, all right, on to the next one. You know?
Just whatever.
And then it's like that night, it's like, oh, I missed another one. And then it was one night where it's like, I didn't miss a bull, and I was so happy. But then again, I didn't shoot a bull.
Something build off.
I was like, that was a good like break tonight. Like we didn't shoot at one.
That's so funny.
So
can't miss if you don't shoot.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was good. So it was that I think it was that Thursday night. The hunt ended that Friday. I was feeling pretty unmotivated. I had missed a bull that morning. Mm-hmm. I had also heard another bull bugling. They were starting to get a little. They knew kind of what my bugle sounded like, and so mm-hmm. they were starting to adjust to that,
yep.
which made it a lot tougher. But it was like that night, or that midday, and I heard a bugle, and I was like, all right, I'm going to leave him there. He's mm-hmm. going to come back down this drainage tonight. I heard him last night,
uh-huh.
and I should be able to cut him off. And so that evening, I started heading up the drainage a little bit, and I hadn't heard much, and there was a whole bunch of moo cows. There was a whole bunch of cattle in there.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
And so I was like, crap. And there was like a whole bunch. I was like, okay, if I get past these cattle, I'm good. I got past like the first group and I was good. And then all of a sudden there's a second group and they were like sleeping. All of a sudden I woke them up and yep, scattered.
Like so much noise.
They go running up this canyon that the elk bedded in, just mooing like crazy because they were calling back to each other. I split them up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, fetch, I'm out of here. Like, I'm done.
Yep.
And I start hiking over the hill and I hear a bugle and I'm like, it didn't sound like an elk. It sounded like a person.
Mm.
I'm like, no, there's no way that's an elk. So I just kept going and I heard it again and I'm like, that's got to be a person. And then I heard it a third time, and then at that time I was
like... It just sounded like just off to you.
Yeah, yeah, right. And that at that time I was like, okay, that sounds like a bull. And so I went to reach for my calls, and my calls had fallen out of my pocket.
Oh, no.
And at this point I'm like, shiz, now how am I supposed to even call in any elk, you know? This bull's rutted up, and I can't even call to him.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I just kind of like thought there for a minute. I was like, I can do without my calls, I'm fine. Like, let's just spot and stalk. Let's see what we can do here, you know? Just my confidence kind of came back right there. Like, let's just try it.
Okay.
And so I kind of came over the hill... And the moo cows, or the cattle, were still mooing like crazy. And I think the bull was ticked at them because they were making so much noise.
Mm.
And I looked down and I could see his rack just raking a tree right below me. All I could see was his antlers.
Wow.
And so I was like, fetch, that's a nice bull, you know? And I'm like, at that point, I'm probably like 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I snuck in a little closer. And he's down below me. I'm just on a sagebrush hill opening.
Uh-huh.
I'm certain it's the same bull I'd heard that morning.
Okay.
And so I ranged him. He was like 45 or so yards. But all I could see was his back and his neck. And at this time, I wasn't patient again. I just got ahead of myself mm-hmm. and I shot. And I shot over his back. I'm like, fetch. Mm-hmm. And this bull, he runs right up to me and stops.
Wow.
And I'm just staring at him with my bow. You know, he's just staring at the broadside. I'm like, shiz. Yeah, and somehow I was able to get an arrow knocked, like, off my quiver. I was able to get it knocked, and as I drew back, I didn't use my release. I just used my fingers.
Really?
I was like, I don't think I have time. Like, still, I still wasn't being
rushed. It's your thought process of being rushed. Yeah.
So I was just like, I drew back, and my rest pops up. Well, it didn't pop up with the arrow in it. It was to the side. I'm like, fetch. So I like pushed it in with my finger. And he's still standing there. I don't know.
He's looking at you like,
he's just looking. He's like 20 yards. Uh-huh. And I just look at him. Didn't even aim. Like, no aim. I just look at him like full recurve Indian style.
Point the end of the arrow.
Yeah, and I just like, I let it go. And I watched my arrow whoop, sink right in him. I just saw blood starting to come down. And it didn't like, I felt like it was a little high.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of trotted off a little bit. And he stopped. And I ranged him that time. And I was going to shoot him again. But then he turned and went over the hill.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, fetch. I don't know if that was a good shot. Mm-hmm. Like, he just kind of walked over the hill.
Didn't act too hurt or anything like that?
Yeah. Didn't act too hurt. And so I'm like, fetch. I hope he's down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down for a minute. I calmed down. I called my dad. Just to kind of give it some time. Because I get ahead of myself.
Yep.
So I sat down. I just sat there for a little bit. And I went to look for blood, couldn't find any blood, even though I saw him bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started heading the direction he went, hoping that he went just like straight down into some open stuff.
Yep.
I came over the hill and I saw his rack sticking out of the ground.
Really?
And at that point, I just lost it. Like, I just started bawling.
Such an emotional experience. Right. Because
that whole week after missing so many bowls and just like losing arrows, and it was 100 degrees outside, it's just tough. So, and not seeing any elk on the whole unit until that week just made it, it was just crazy. So, and they killed on some actual public land in that unit when a lot of the landowners were wanting like $3,000 to $4,000 to hunt on their land.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So it was pretty crazy how that all came together. But as I just stayed along that boundary line, a lot of the bulls I was calling from the trophy unit, obviously like South Cache is a great unit.
Yeah.
Those bulls were coming across to look for cows and coming down the water.
Mm.
And so that's how I was able to get them, you know, was able to harvest a bull in that unit.
It's perseverance, bro.
Yeah, I gotta wait 5 years.
To even apply again
in our state. So, but that's hard. It was totally worth it. 0 points to have an opportunity like that.
Oh, yeah.
The experience in itself is worth that, in my opinion.
Like, I was still totally content with, like I said, the whole process of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally content with, like, I scouted all summer and then going up there and missing bulls and calling them in and never hunting elk before. Like, I felt like I got the full experience from the hunt itself.
Yeah.
But without even killing one, you know?
Yeah.
So, me, when it actually came together and I killed one, it was just like a cherry on top. Like, it just wow. A lot of emotions right there.
Yeah,
that's a unique perspective for sure. You were happy. You'd felt like you had fulfilled like your job or whatever before even killing an elk.
Right, exactly. I was like, man, I feel like I've done everything already on this hunt, you know.
That's so cool.
I felt content, even though like I hadn't like achieved the final goal. Like, I still felt content with the way it all had panned out.
Yeah, and to those, I guess, they're non-hunters or everything, that's a testament right there of, you know, that we're not killers, we're hunters.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's a lot more than that.
Exactly.
Super unique.
So that was definitely a very memorable hunt, and I'm hoping to get that mount back here pretty soon. So it's been a taxidermist for like a year and a half.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Did you pay him before?
Yeah. So we're still waiting, but it'll turn out good once it's done.
Yeah, that's cool. In taxidermy school, you always have that, like, memory saved right there. Whenever I see like that, you can...
Yeah,
have that memory.
Exactly.
That's why.
So I'm pretty excited to get him back. He'll look good. That was my first elk, so.
Yeah, you'll never forget that hunt.
No.
This amount of stuff you learned.
So cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing.
Even before that, you know, like a low success rate hunt, and everybody on social media, I'm sure, and everybody this and that, telling you and putting doubts in your mind, and you stay to that.
Yeah, right. A lot of people were telling me to turn the tag back in, and I called a lot of people that hunted the unit as well, and they're just like, no, that's like the worst unit in the state. Like, it's mostly private, and there's no bulls on the public land. And I'd heard a few guys like, yeah, we've killed raghorns, we had chances at 350 bulls and stuff. So there's a few people that had good opportunities, and that kind of gave me a little bit to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people were getting into elk, I was, like, content, you know. And so that's kind of what I went off by, and I was like, no, I'm not going to turn my tag in. Like, let's just stick to it and keep going.
What was driving you? So in the lows of those, the nights, and you get back to the truck and you're just doubting everything you thought you ever known, what kept you going? What got you up the next morning?
I feel like hearing the bugles all night was what really kept me going. Just hearing that and just like, man, I've been seeing these big bulls every single day. I've been shooting at them, like, that sucks, but I'm still hearing them, like, they're still there.
Knowing that tomorrow's a new day, you know, what happened today doesn't affect tomorrow.
Right.
You know, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a hunting does that to you, man. Just like you say that when you walked up on that your bull and you saw his rack sticking up, you know, just the wave of emotions that you felt. That, you know. The same can be when you're walking back to Chuck that night, you know, and those nights that you missed a bull or maybe hadn't seen anything scouting, you know, it's just like, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just wonder what to do. Like, you just don't know what to do.
A loss of thought and everything else.
So, but I felt like that hunt, I learned probably more than anything on any other hunt I've been on. That really drove me into the elk. And so, like, the guiding, like, this year when I started guiding and all that, you know, going hunting with Lydia and on these elk hunts and with people, like, I learned a lot from that hunt, and so that just gave me a lot of confidence going into other people's hunts and stuff like that, too. Yeah,
for sure.
It's cool. What, how is that? How is guiding? And
guiding's fun. It's definitely a really, like, cool experience to be with other people and helping them. It's a lot less stress for me, because I'm not trying to fill my own tag. But at the same time, you want to treat it like you're filling your own tag and treat it like your own hunt, because these guys are paying a lot of money for these tags, right? So... like I said, I felt like it was a less stressful on my side, just because it was like, I don't have a gun. I'm not like as aggressive. I don't have to be.
It's kind of up to them. You know, you give them their options, but ultimately it's their
decision. As long as I was giving them opportunities every day, I felt like I was doing my job.
Okay.
You know, I can't control the size of the bull that comes in. So if I call one and it comes in, he's like, no, I don't want to shoot that. That's not on me. You know, like, that's fine. That's, you paid the money for the tag. Like, this is fun. Let's keep going. So that was definitely
that
super cool experience.
Definitely.
Bro. How many hunts did you guide?
I think I guided 8 or 9 this year. I didn't have a ton, but at the same time, like, half and half of the time, half the time I was guiding, half the time I was hunting with, like, Lydia or, you know, friends out, you know, so I was still doing my own type of hunting, like, throughout the year. So it wasn't like my whole fall was just taken by guiding.
Yeah. Well, you were, like, mainly guiding through September, right?
Mainly through September. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There was, like, I think a week and a half there, I went and helped Lydia kill a bull in Idaho. And then, so other than that, I was guiding.
Cool.
So, and then most of October as well.
You can't replace that experience. You can't put a dollar price on that experience that you're gaining through guiding, you know, and the things you're learning.
Right. I feel like helping somebody else and helping them achieve things that they want to do, like in the whole hunting world type of thing, something I'm accustomed to, is just, I mean, it's just crazy, because they feel the same emotions that we do, like when we kill something, even though they're paying money for it and paying, you know, me to guide them.
Yeah.
It's still the same thing, you know, so... Yeah. It's just like, to be a part of that is something special too.
Definitely.
So.
Very cool. Very cool. Then you had the opportunity to go up to Alaska too.
Yeah, yep, that was fun.
How was that? Tell us about that.
Well, I'm young and I just figured I want to travel a lot and do a lot of things before I settle down and start a family.
Yes.
And so I've always like just wanted to go a few places in my life, and Alaska was one of them.
That's like the pinnacle of hunting.
Right. You know, like, you got to go up to the last frontier and hunt something.
Yeah, that's true.
So I took my coworker, my best friend, buddy, Colton Rock, with me up there, and we went up there together, and we kind of went off of a couple waypoints that a couple buddies gave us, and we rented a U-Haul van. And we drove up into the...
You drove to Alaska?
Well, we flew up there.
Okay.
Rented the U-Haul and then drove up into, like, the tundra.
Okay.
And then just hunted out of the van. So we just camped. We just, that was, like, base camp. So we didn't tell the U-Haul guy what we were using his van for. We just rented it and took it.
That's awesome.
So we got it stuck in a river and, like, took it up muddy trails and everything. Like, anywhere we could get that van, we took it.
The U-Haul van. That's
awesome. We had to get it towed out of the river, but other than that, like, it was a go-getter. Like, it went.
After getting pulled out of the river.
Yeah.
So you had, like, basically no idea what you were getting into?
No, we had no idea. So the first day, because there's a quota on the area we were in, it's any weapon, so we brought our bows, had one rifle with us, and we drove up into this area, and they have a quota, and so they can only kill like 10% of the herd that's there.
Okay.
And so I think they can only kill like 800 caribou or so. All these bulls and cows, all the caribou herds are just migrating through. It's a migratory trail. And so we had no idea like what to expect. As we were driving up there, we're driving up this highway, it's just caribou after caribou after caribou, and people's trucks coming out, and we're like, crap. Like, we're already freaking out, you know. We show up, like, halfway through opening day, and we get up there, and it's, like, for a few miles straight down the road, it's just vehicles just parked all the way along the road.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're like, great. Like, this is the worst we've ever had it with people, you know. And these people can drive their four-wheelers off the trails, like, through the tundra. It don't matter where. Like, they can just drive them anywhere.
Really?
Yeah. So these locals are just driving everywhere, shooting any caribou that runs in front of them. Like, I'm hearing shots left and right, you know?
Jeez.
So me and Colton get out of the van. We're just like, all right, let's just start hoofing it. I never stepped in tundra stuff before, and that stuff sucks.
Sinks.
Yeah. It's like walking on a waterbed. So, like, a 5 miles here is, like, you know, it's, like, 20 up there. It sucks.
It's like walking in, like, crusty, or not exactly, but, like, working through snow or something. It's just exerts
your energy. Exactly. Walking on the muskeg and stuff. And so we hiked probably about 10 miles the first day. Saw 4 caribou total. Watched 2 of them die. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Two of them died.
It was pretty rough, right? So they were just cows too. And so as non-residents, we could only shoot bulls, but the residents could shoot a cow.
Shoot
or bull. They shoot anything. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up seeing a lot of carcasses and tons of people, and it's just like, fetch, what do we do?
Yeah.
So, and then that night, we got the U-Haul stuck in the river. That kind of stopped our hunt for the evening. Ran into a couple guys from Colorado. Mm-hmm. They had a couple real big bulls, told us where to go. So that morning, we woke up, ran into a lot, like tons more people again, didn't see much caribou. It's like, all right, well, let's just drive somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
So we drove down lower to where it's a lot more timber. There's a lot of timber. Okay. And the caribou still migrate through all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
But the four-wheelers and stuff couldn't get up through the timber.
Mm.
And so up in some of these basins, kind of like high country basins here in Utah, mm-hmm. you'd look up in those basins and we saw a whole bunch of caribou up there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we're like, all right, well, let's park right here and hike up there.
Okay.
So it was about a 3-mile hike or so. And this is day two, so usually the quota fills up in 3 days, so we knew we had to be pretty, you know, we had
get
to hurry, you know.
Yeah.
And so we left the bows in the truck. We figured, well, screw that, like, let's go up there with the rifle and get
kill
it done.
Something.
Yeah, let's go kill something. Back to the confidence thing of using a rifle, you know. So
we
see the caribou. We couldn't tell if they were bulls or cows.
Mm-hmm.
There was two big groups of them, and so we worked our way up there. And it was about, like, right before we were getting to where we could at least see the first group, I looked up on the skyline, and I saw about 6 or 7 caribou, and there was 3 mature bulls just kind of coming across the skyline.
Uh-huh.
And so Colton had the gun below me, and I yelled at him. I said, get your ass up here. Like, we
got
to go.
We
got to
go.
And he's just dying. Like, he can't hike in this stuff. You know, he's just dying.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, dude, we got to go. So we get up there. We end up cutting them off, and it was maybe a 100-yard shot or so. And he dropped the first one. I let him shoot the bigger bull. Dropped the first one and then gave the gun to me. I missed twice. Hit him in the antler the second shot.
Oh, no.
Just like nicked the antler. I was shaking so bad. Like, I knew, like, first shot, I was like, oh, I know that's an air ball. Like, second shot, like, oh, yeah, total air ball. You know? And then finally, I put one through the pump the third shot, and he ran maybe 50 yards and tumbled
nice.
Up. So we had those two bulls about 3 miles from camp, and we packed them up. And the laws up there, you have to take as much meat as possible. Like, you have to take just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it in one trip. I had to go help Colton with his after I got mine back, but we were able to get it all down and in the U-Haul.
So some of the packouts could be miserable.
Yep. So
sure, that was terrible.
It was
sinking.
Miserable. Yeah.
Could you fly your meat home?
Yeah. So we flew about 50 pounds home. We didn't know exactly how it would taste or anything like that. So that's how much we could take as a carry-on. So we threw 50 pounds home. And then we donated the rest to, like, a shelter that was there, so just for the needy, you know, for people. And they really appreciated that. So we gave them that.
Cool.
I really wish we would have kept more now, because after tasting it, it's some of the best meat I've ever had.
Really? What's it comparable to, like, as far as Western big game?
Definitely elk, I would say. I'd say it's not as gamey as elk, though. It's almost like more tender. It just peels right apart.
Really?
Yeah, it's insane.
Cool.
But those caribou they were eating, I don't know exactly what else they eat other than, like, the locals were telling us to eat the blueberries,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't know what else they were eating other than blueberries.
Really?
So the meat's sweet. It tastes great.
It's very cool.
Is that what you were eating, just wild blueberries too?
Oh, yeah.
I saw that.
That's all I was walking on. I was like, for the first day, I kept like looking down. I'm like, what are these berries? Like, they look like blueberries.
Uh-huh.
And I just started eating them. Like, I didn't know what they were. I was like, if I die, I don't care. I'm starving.
Right? I'm starving out here.
So I just start eating these berries. I'm like, dude, these are good. Like, I told Cole, I said, these things are good.
Uh-huh.
Like, you need to try some. No, I ain't trying those. You know, it's like, you're gonna die if you eat those. I have handfuls of them. You know,
there's always the deal. If it's red, you're dead. Like, I was just stay away from the red.
Right,
berries.
Right. Just stay away from the red ones.
Yeah.
And so we end up asking some locals later. I was like, what are these berries? And they're like, oh, there's blueberries. I was like, yeah.
I'll sweet. I told you, Cole. I knew what I was doing. Eating them.
And they were good. So. Mm-hmm. That was definitely a highlight of the trip, as well as eating as many blueberries as I could.
Yeah. Of course.
So you seem like a guy that acts first, thinks later. Like, on this,
I do.
Not necessarily in a bad way.
Yeah,
but
not
like,
in a bad way, but yeah, I do a lot of the time, yeah.
Yeah, like I appreciate that, as far as, because, you know, I feel like a lot of opportunity can slip by you if you over-evaluate it and stuff like that.
I feel like I always learn the hard way. That's something I've always been trying to get better at.
Yeah.
But it just happens. Like, I always learn the hard way.
No better teacher than experience.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I can't learn unless something happens like that. Like, I fail. So
that's
just kind of how that's gone.
Some people are just like that.
Lot, so.
You just got to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
You won't make the same mistake twice, I bet, you know, if something like that happens.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
It's cool.
So.
Very cool. Yeah. What's next, though, as far as, like, these big exotic hunts?
Oh,
what do you have?
Fetch. There's a lot of places I want to go.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know, honestly. I'd still like to go back to Texas again. I went there a couple years ago for whitetail.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I didn't harvest anything. I had an opportunity and missed a really big buck, but I didn't bring one home.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go back there and hunt whitetail again, or maybe axis deer or something like that. Mm-hmm. But probably first on the list is probably New Zealand. I'd like to go there for either tar or fallow deer, probably.
That's some crazy country.
So, yeah, and it's you know, I've kind of thrown in like the pricing and stuff like that, and I feel like I'd definitely be able to afford it.
It's pretty reasonable, honestly. People like look at it, you know, these across the world hunts and stuff like that. You think, but no, if you can kind of justify it in different things, you can do it.
Yeah, your biggest thing's flight and travel. You know, like actually getting there and hunting. That's nothing. You know, mm-hmm. especially there, it's very, very cheap.
So different compared to ours. So.
Yeah. Definitely. So that's definitely something on the list. I don't know if I'll do that next year, or the year after, but in the next couple of years for sure.
Cool.
So
very cool.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Axis deer, that'd be tough. I don't know much about it, but I just heard from
Joe on the island, Hawaii, bro.
Yeah, he said it's cool. The toughest hunt he's ever done.
See, I would love to. I know they have him in Texas, but looking at like the price point and range and stuff like that, like Hawaii, it's about the same price other than like travel to get there.
Yeah.
But I mean, to have the experience of being in Hawaii and actually harvesting an animal, you might as well do it, you know.
Jeez, that's something special. That's very cool. Yeah, I wanted to touch on, so everyone be like, I can already see the haters coming out. Bro, like, shoot your bow more, shoot your rifle more, you know, whatever. You're shooting paper and shooting an animal are like two way different things.
Yeah,
bro.
And see, you know, like, I definitely like those guys that practice a lot, like, props to you.
You know?
Like, I feel like I practice my fair share and I feel very confident with my equipment. And I feel like that's how it should be. Like, if you feel confident with your equipment, you take long shots, like, whatever you do, you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to rag on anybody for taking 100 plus yard shot with their bow if they've done it before.
If they feel like they're comfortable
with it. If you're comfortable and the situation's how it should be, like, wind's not blowing, animal's broadside, like, things are perfect, like, take your shot if you're comfortable. But, you know, like, people can hate on what they want and what they think ethics are.
Yeah.
Ethics, I feel like, is all a personal thing.
It is.
It's a personal
100%.
Level. So that's kind of how it goes with that. Like, you can get the hate from people, but it's all personal. Like, that's your own deal.
Yeah, 100%. Even that, you could have a guy that, you know, even go on the rifle side of things, a guy that has like a custom rifle, whatever, and reloads every load of the tee and shoots once a week and everything.
Right. But,
and so he's more capable, in my opinion. If he feels more comfortable, take a 1,200 yard shot, like, more power to you.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I don't think anything's right or wrong with that. You know, so many people, especially with the era of like hunting, kind of getting a building scene with social media and stuff, a lot of guys are quick to have the Twitter fingers, you know, and spread the hate.
A lot of people like to judge and jump to conclusions very quickly, it seems like. And like I said, it's all a personal thing. And I feel like it, like, more power to you if you can take those long shots and do you. But like, there's no sense in hating people for doing it or trying it. Like, everybody's different when it comes to it. So,
Wherever you feel, I guess, if you feel like you're capable of killing that animal, you know, because at the end of the day, I think it's due respect to the animal, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It really is.
It's kill him as quickly and effectively as possible.
Yeah, because I don't want to be looking for an animal for a few days, and that, you know, that just takes away from the hunt and your happiness and everything that kind of comes along with the hunt when you lose something or you're trying to find it.
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of hike outs after not finding something, just no talking.
Exactly.
You know,
everybody loses animals and they kind of experience that, you know, it happens.
And to go with that, so Alaska's different. If you draw blood and you find blood on the ground, like, hunt's over.
As far as I know, correct, yeah.
But in Utah, they release these quotas and these numbers. They put into account animals that are going to be wounded and die later on.
Yeah.
You know, so the people, the non-hunters or even hunters that ridicule other people, it's all up to you, and it's law. You can still harvest animals.
Yeah, it's all ethics and back to that kind of stuff too, and what you feel comfortable with. If you feel like you killed that animal and you don't want to hunt anymore, like, all power to you. That's up to you. You know, but it just depends on the situation, the person. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's a tough situation to be in.
There's a lot of hate on that side of things too. I mean, that's happened with me over social media. Like, it happened. I feel like it happens to everybody.
Yeah.
So
how do you personally deal with hate?
I try to not deal with it. Like, I'm not a fan of the drama or anything like that. Like I said, it's all a personal thing. So when people kind of hate on me for this or that, maybe it's just because they haven't experienced certain things, or like, they just don't understand. Maybe I feel like it's just misunderstanding.
I think
most
to hate, especially on cyber and social media, is through jealousy.
It is. People are arrogant, and that's just how they're going to be. Like, I mean, it's just common with everything. You're always going to have, you know, the wicked and the negative, and there's always negative that comes with anything positive. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
feels like anything you see, or a couple local big bucks got killed this year. The first you hear rumors, all he killed the rifle that night. You know, it's like everyone's first to assume the worst.
People jump to conclusions without knowing what happened or understand it. You know,
instead of congratulating him, you know, it's
instead
like,
of being like,
nah, he didn't do that. Fair. Right,
you know? Yeah, a hunter's worst enemy is hunters themselves. Exactly, like, it really is. Like as much as we talk about the anti-hunters and the vegans and all these people, like, it's really not, like...
We're our own worst enemy.
Yeah, we really are. Like, we'd be a lot better off if we were all together. So...
Exactly. We have enough, you know, these animal activists and PETA and all these guys trying to shoot us down anyway, so why don't we just join together? But there's such...
It seems like it's so hard. There's so much contention in our industry and in this environment that it's just hard for us to come together.
It is. What are you... hunting's a hard... It's. I mean, obviously, the more you see, there's been some lucrative businesses come through hunting. What do you plan on maybe starting something on your own down the road, or
you know, I don't know, honestly. I would definitely like to. I've gotten into the videography and photography side of things a little bit, done a little bit of schooling and whatnot, and I'd really like to get into that. Kind of with the guiding thing, so I kind of have, you know, the clientele with guiding, like, I'd like to get to where I could travel the world and maybe film people's hunts, you know, half the year. And do that for a living, kind of work for myself. That's obviously, that's everybody's goal, like, work for yourself, do your own thing, be self-employed. That's definitely what I would like to do, maybe guide part of the year, then maybe do that part of the year. I think that'd be awesome. Especially with, like, Lydia doing all her artwork and stuff like that on her own, I definitely like to be in the same ballpark as her and be able to do stuff with her all the time.
Cool.
And so that's probably in the future kind of what I'm looking into, but for now, the Walmart gigs, the shiz.
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you work 3 days and go home.
Yeah,
well, didn't you take a lot of time off too? What was the deal you had going on there?
Yeah, so Walmart, where I work, actually decided they let me have 2 months off to go guide.
Wow.
Which was great, even though I wasn't guiding half of that time. I was hunting for myself. Not letting them know that. But they, you know, they saw that Colton and I were hard workers throughout the year, and they respected that, and they were able to give us the time off. And so
That's so super awesome.
Yeah. It goes to show, you know, you work hard. People are
It's nice to be somewhere where somebody appreciates the people that actually work hard. Even though I'm working for a multi-billion-dollar company, at least they realize that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a good gig for now. Do I see myself there in 10 years? Probably not. But, you know, now, like, 4 days off a week, it gives me a lot of time to focus on those goals and dreams that I want to achieve.
Yeah. Going back to, like, the videography and stuff, even watching hunts on YouTube, it could be, it's like, I don't want to, like, name drop anybody, but like, you watch a 5 minute video and they kill like a 4-inch bull at the end of it, like, that wasn't very good. They could have like a video that's very well put together with like HD film and all the little things of hunting, you know, and they could be unsuccessful. I appreciate that video that much more.
Exactly.
You know? It's so cool.
And everybody has their own different style and way of videoing things and putting it together and showing it to an audience.
Yeah.
But I feel like the way some people put things together and kind of bring the hunter into the whole, like, into the film itself.
Into the experience.
Like, into the experience itself. It connects with people a lot more.
Definitely.
And it helps people that don't hunt understand it more as well, rather than just that 5 minute video of, oh, I just killed 400 bull, boom, it's done. You know what I mean? So I feel like that side of things, like, maybe just not the videography for myself, but like showing it to people that don't understand hunting in a sense too, is going to help people understand it.
Definitely, bro.
So I think that's what...
Go ahead.
I think that's kind of what we need for, like, hunting videos, to show people that it's not just about killing. It's about actually getting out and just appreciating, you know, the wilderness and, you know, you know, videoing missing your shots, or just like the struggle within the hunt.
Exactly.
Like, 'cause you don't see enough of that, you know. It's all about just, you know, killing the big animal.
And that's where the attention's at, is social media too. Yeah. Whether it's YouTube or anything, the attention's on the phone, the computers, everything. And so everybody's going to see it, you know. So do you want to portray yourself as that hunter that just killed something, you know, there's blood everywhere, man, I killed it, this is awesome, rather than actually showing them the whole experience and what goes on, you know what I mean?
Definitely, man.
So, it just, like I said, everybody has their own style and stuff, but I feel like that's the proper way to show it.
Definitely, like, I agree with that 100%.
So.
Yeah, bro. I don't know, I feel like you're doing a lot of awesome things out there, man. I super appreciate guys like you that... doing it your way, you're being authentic and you're being original, man. So
I appreciate it. So
it's fun to see. It's fun to follow your journey, just on the little, you know, little pictures you do post.
Yeah, I do.
It's
like
pretty cool.
Yeah, social media is fun. It's, I mean, that's all a personal thing for me too. You know, I'm not trying to make it big or anything, you know, but you know, I enjoy the people that follow along and help motivate me, you know, throughout the year as well.
Yeah, social media definitely has its downs and stuff, but man, like, as far as drawing inspiration, that's a
it's a big
great
thing.
Platform for
I've made so many great friends on social media. It's not even funny, like, most of my friend group in high school was like nothing compared to what my friend group out of social media has become now. Like, it's insane. Like, I've got such a strong friendship through social media. It's insane. So It's definitely, it has its goods that come with the, definitely, you know, the negative side of things on it.
Yeah. So, just in closing, man, what life lesson, what message do you want to leave with the audience, man?
If I were to leave a message with the audience, I'd probably just tell people to not wait. Like, just don't wait. Like, because the more time you wait, the less it's actually going to happen. Just stay positive and work towards your goals, because you've only got one life on this floating rock. Like, you really do. And if people sit down and actually, like, think about that, like, you want to be happy. I just tell people to be happy. Do what makes you happy, because if you're stuck doing something you don't love for the rest of your life,
doesn't matter how much money they're paying,
you're going to regret it in the future. Yep. You can always make more money.
Yeah.
But you can't like, relive 20 years of your life and wish, man, I could have done this or that. So I just tell people to live their life and be happy and do what makes them happy and be positive about the whole life, everything, you know, in a whole.
And you're living the words, dude. You're out there doing
it.
Yeah, just saying, doing what you love.
I told myself that at a young age, like, I'm not going to live 80 years and not do what I want to do.
I'm nothing to show for it.
Yeah. You know,
so that's a pile of money.
And, you know, the hunting thing isn't for everybody. Like, no. Just, I mean, that is for me. I love being an outdoorsman. I love to do that stuff. But if you're into skiing or snowboarding or whatever it is, like, go do you. Be happy and just enjoy your life.
Whatever your passion is, man, go out and pursue it. So. Yeah. Powerful words, folks.
Yep.
You only get one chance.
But I appreciate you guys.
Okay, well, we appreciate you, Sheldon, and good luck with your next hunting season coming up.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Yeah.